Houston Dynamo, Portland Timbers, Sporting Kansas, Los Angeles Galaxy,
Pitch Pass,
Toronto FC, Real Salt Lake,
this is my red, white, and blue.
Chicago Fire,
this is my anthem to you.
Columbus Crew, FC Dallas, New York Red Bulls.
Pitch Pass, your all-access credential to the people that matter in MLS. Here's your host, Greg Roach.
MLS Cup 2013 is finally upon us. Welcome to Pitch Pass. Thank you so much for downloading the show. PitchPass.com for everything related to the show, including how you can maybe donate to the show. Thank you for downloading. Tell some friends. That's the least you can do, right? We're going to get you all set up for the match Saturday, 4 p.m. Eastern at Sporting Park, featuring Sporting Kansas City versus Real Salt Lake. And we'll do that by talking with Brian Dunseth a little later on in the show. He covers Real Salt Lake, so he should know tactically what's going on and what are some of the key matchups we need to look forward to for the match on Saturday. And we were going to have a player from one of the two teams on this week, but I have found historically these guys tend to get a little tight, shut down, get into that game mode just before a big match like this. So rather than talking to a guy who maybe isn't ready to open up or probably doesn't feel comfortable opening up at this point, figured we'd bring a guy in who has been in that situation before and can talk to us about what a player's mindset is like leading up to a big match like this. And to do that, we bring in our good friend and New York Red Bulls midfielder, Dax McCarty. Dax, thank you so much for joining us again. How are you, sir?
I'm doing all right, man. I'm hanging in there. I'm enjoying the offseason, enjoying resting and kicking the legs up.
I saw that you were in Orlando doing some shopping, which was very nice. What are your thoughts on Orlando City, being that that's your area?
Yeah, my thoughts on Orlando City have been pretty vocal about it. I'm a huge supporter of soccer, specifically MLS being brought back to the Southeast. I think that was a huge void in the geography of where MLS is trying to make their footprint. And being in Florida, for me is obviously a no-brainer. The fact that it's actually in the city where I grew up, in the city where my family and a bunch of my friends live. The fact that MLS has decided to, award them an MLS franchise is incredible. Something that I'm very proud of. I'm very proud of the whole fan base. I'm proud of the city. Obviously, I'm impressed and very proud of the team and the coaches and the players and the front office in Orlando. I think they're doing things the right way. I think they've been successful on the field. And if you look at what Don Garber says that he wants in an MLS team, they have it all. I actually went and I toured around the site where they're going to build the stadium. It's a couple blocks from the Amway Center where Magic play, and it's right downtown Orlando. So all the parameters they checked off, and I think that they're going to be a very successful franchise. And obviously, it's a good thing for this league.
And you probably, growing up, you probably never imagined that there would be an MLS franchise so close to where you grew up. When did it start becoming a reality to you of, holy crap, these guys got their stuff together. There could be a team in Orlando.
Never. I'll say never in a million years did I think Orlando had a realistic chance of getting a Major League Soccer team. And it's not because, the city can't handle it. It was just mainly because there are other big cities in Florida that I thought might get a crack first. But when I started, it's funny, when they were the Austin Aztecs, which they were a couple years ago, I still had a bunch of friends that played on the Austin Aztecs that I went to North Carolina with, Jamie Watson, Michael Callahan, to name a few guys. When they moved to Orlando, I stayed in touch with those guys. And when I would go home for the off season, I would hang out with Jamie, and he introduced me to their ownership. He introduced me to Phil Rollins and Adrian Heath. I trained with him a couple times to stay in shape. And that first year that they were in the league, and I'm pretty sure they won it. I'm not positive, but I think they won the title. And their stated ambition after that was, we want to be an MLS franchise. The reason they moved from Austin to Orlando was because they wanted to be in the MLS. So that's when I first started to think, wow, maybe this is a possibility. These guys have really bright heads on their shoulders. They have a good team. The fan base was improving every year. So that was something that, for me, I finally started to realize maybe after 2 or 3 years of them being in the USL, maybe I'd say 2 years ago, it became a really strong reality that they could do it.
And all due respect to your current situation, can we foresee a 38-year-old grizzled Dax McCarty coming home for one last season under a DP contract, of course?
Oh, well, the DP contract would say a lot. But yeah, I've been asked this question before, and my answer has always been the same. I'm extremely happy in New York. New York has been amazing to me. The fans are incredible. Red Bull Arena is the best stadium in MLS, in my opinion. And our team is very good. We have a very good team. We're very strong. We have a very strong ownership and obviously great coaching staff. So I couldn't be happier in New York. I would love to play out my foreseeable future in New York. I have, you know, hopefully a good couple years left here. I have a bunch of years, you know, a couple years left on my contract here. And that's something that I'll always respect and something that I'll always focus on. But that being said, I'd be lying if I said that, you know, I wasn't interested in being able to play at least 1 year in front of my family and friends in Orlando when I'm an older guy. And maybe, you know, maybe I'm worth more money, or maybe I'm worth a developmental contract by that age. But who knows? You know, that's the great thing about MLS. That's the great thing about being an athlete. And it's also kind of a curse, is your future is always kind of up in the air. And to me, I love it in New York, and I wouldn't leave New York for anything right now. But that being said, in the future, depending on certain things and how things go and, you know, how I play and if I can stay healthy and all those good things, I would love to be able to play professional soccer games regularly in front of a sold out crowd, in front of my family and friends in the place that I grew up, because I never thought I would see the day it happened. But that being said, if it doesn't happen, if I retire and I'm still a New York Red Bull, I will be perfectly happy with that. And I hope the fans will be too.
A lot of our rest of our conversation is going to be you as a player telling me about what a player will be going through. And we're going to start actually with your mindset right now as far as the New York Red Bull moves, or the exodus that has been happening the last few weeks. It's a in pecky we trust situation, I'm sure, on your part. But how was it those few days where it seemed as if every day you were sending out tweets saying, I'm going to miss this guy, I'm going to miss this guy, I'm going to miss this guy?
That's, you know, it sucks about our business. The reality is, this is the business we signed up for, and this is the business we're in. With MLS being structured the way that it is, every single year teams are going to have turnover, and that's how it goes. It's not just New York Red Bulls. I mean, people might say, you know, because of who we are and because of some of the players that we do let go, we might a little bit more stick for it. It might be a little bit more out there in the media and with fans. But I think, to be quite honest, this is just the reality of our situations. I think, you know, when I was in Dallas and I wasn't protected for the expansion draft in 2011 season, you know, I think, you know, I was taken back and I was surprised. But then I realized quickly that this can happen to anyone. This is a league that just, you know, obviously the salary cap affects a lot of things. And so when you have players that are making a lot of money, and when they have guys in their positions that step up and play well, the reality of the situation is it makes you expendable. And, you know, in my opinion, like I've said on Twitter and, you know, like I've made known, I'm not shy about, you know, how I feel about certain guys and certain guys that I was close with on this team that, you know, I obviously would have loved to see them in New York the next couple of years. And, but the way the business works, I knew it was always a possibility that I was going to be losing a couple close friends and a couple great teammates. And it's not just the guys that I'm close with. It's the guys that, you know, I'm not as close with that I'll miss as well. I mean, our team this year was very successful. You know, we put a major trophy in our trophy case for the first time in 18 years, and that this franchise should be very proud of that. So all the guys on the roster, from number one to number 28, 29, to the coaching staff, to the equipment managers, to our front office, everyone should be proud of what we accomplished, and we did it together. But that being said, obviously I'm upset that a couple of guys have you know, are going to be moving on, and I just hope and keep my fingers crossed that they don't come back to hurt us in the long run.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing that stuck to me was, it's like, hey, these Red Bulls had probably one of their most successful seasons in the history of the franchise. So when you start seeing that that guys are starting, who were major contributors, are starting to move on, that's the thing that made me kind of scratch my head. And I know you have a good relationship with your coach. You had to have called him and go, there's a plan, right, Mike? There's a plan.
The funny thing is I what we do as players is, and that's the way my mindset is, I try to never question our front office, our coaching staff, our organization. I never question what their vision is and what their direction is, because you have to hope and you have to pray that as a player, they do have a plan and they do have a reason behind making the moves that they do make. You know, I obviously I can't comment on the reasons behind getting rid of the guys. That's just the nature of the business, and that's something that's always going to be a reality in MLS. So you have to accept it. And yeah, I would say that obviously, you know, I'll probably have a conversation with Mike, and he's a really open guy, and you know, he'll be honest with us, and he'll tell us how it works, and this is just the reality of the business we're in. So, like I said, you know, it's definitely upsetting, but this is something that's not new in this league. I just hope, you know, a guy like Brandon Barkley just doesn't come back and do what he did to DC United after they let go of him. I mean, that was a sort of sweet justice for him, and let's just hope that he does that to DC again this year, not us.
Don Garber just gave the state of the league not too long ago, and one of the questions I wanted to ask you, because it pertains to on the field things, is the question about the winter schedule. Now, you played, you're a Florida boy, so that'll I would assume lean you towards one direction, but you also played in the now infamous snow game, or came out and trained, warmed up for the snow game against DC United last season. That's New York. We're looking Toronto, Montreal, points north. What would be your thoughts on playing a winter schedule?
You know, that's a tough question because the answer is very complicated, and I think Don Garber does a good job of answering the question honestly and candidly. And, you know, the points that he makes are valid points. And, I think there's arguments for and against both schedules. So for me, playing throughout the winter, you would be in line with the European season. And I think that would be great for our national team. I think that would be great for, maybe our viewing audiences, maybe, TV ratings would be a little bit better because you'd have more viewers. But that being said, we live in a massive country. We live in a country with, you know, weather that just is so unpredictable that it would be really tough to justify moving to a winter calendar. I think the main thing with the snow is that, you know, it's really tough to play a game on grass in a big snowstorm. I mean, we saw the U.S. game, that famous U.S. game where they continued to play. And, you know, that, let's be honest, let's call it what it was. That wasn't really a soccer game. That was just kind of two teams getting through the weather and just kind of kicking the ball back and forth. So I think it would be very difficult. You'd have to have heated turf fields. I think that's how they get through it in Russia and Ukraine and countries like that. Obviously, I don't know for sure, but I'm positive that some teams do it that way because that's really the only way they can play through those really harsh winters. So I think there's arguments for and against it. I personally, I like the way that MLS is set up now, playing through the summer. I think it makes for, you know, obviously a schedule that doesn't take a break and makes for plenty of games. But that being said, I wouldn't be opposed to moving to a winter schedule if they could figure out ways to maybe work around the inclement weather, because, you know, like you said, we were preparing to play a playoff game, and I believe it was late November against DC United, and I mean the nor'easter came through and just really messed up a lot of plans for people. So those are things that are always going to be a touchy subject. The way the league goes, the direction the league goes, I'm sure they'll have a bunch of analysts making sure that whatever decision they make is the right one.
Dax, take us into the mindset of the guys on Real Salt Lake and Sporting Kansas City as they prepare for their match for MLS Cup on Saturday. The 2-week break, let's just take it step by step. The 2-week break after, you know, you've gotten through the Eastern Conference Final, the Western Conference Final, what do you do at that point when you know you've got a week of basically downtime?
Yeah. Well, we went through the same thing when I went to MLS Cup with FC Dallas in 2010. There was certainly not that big of a break, but there was a definite break. I believe it was like 10, 11 days of a break in between the conference finals and the MLS Cup. So what you want to do is you want to celebrate where you've gotten to that point. You know, an Eastern Conference championship and a Western Conference championship is certainly a good accomplishment. And then once you enjoy that for a couple of days and you get your legs back, all your focus has to go on putting every ounce of energy into one final game. I mean, in this league, we have playoffs and the playoffs are the most important thing in this league. If this was the European type of league, then obviously we'd be sitting here as champions, but it's not. This is the MLS. So the MLS Cup is the Super Bowl. That's what teams play for. That's all the marbles there. So going through the mindset of the players, I think what you want to do is keep it light. You want to be relaxed. You want to be happy. You want to be joking around in training. And you want to be training hard, but you don't want to be going too hard to where you're, you know, going to pick up a stupid niggle or a stupid injury in training, because the most important thing is that you have your best 11 players healthy for the MLS Cup. So if you have a couple guys that are nagging injuries, you know, this break is probably great for them. I think Chris Winger has been nursing a pretty bad injury. And I think, you know, this big break has given him a chance to realistically make him a possibility for MLS Cup. I think the same thing with Saborillo. I'm not quite sure about that. But the break is certainly tough for fans and for media, because you don't want to lose that momentum. You always want to have the next game, that next weekend, so you can build up the hype and you can promote the hell out of it and you can do all these things that would really build up the hype. But I think for the most part, the biggest thing for me as a player is you want to have the best 11 players on the field for both teams. You want to see the best players from both teams on the field and who's going to be the best team at the end of the game. I mean, that's the most important thing, in my opinion, is that you have both teams are fully healthy. And so to me, the break is a good thing because it gives players a chance to recover and rest, and there's no excuses. You go out on the field and the better team will win. And that's how I think, you know, the game is going to go. And hopefully the players are relaxed. They're going to be a little bit nervous. I mean, the MLS Cup is, you know, it's like any other big sporting event. It's kind of a little bit of a pageant. You have media, you have interviews, you have cameras in your face all the time. You have fans all around you. So it's a little bit of a pageant. And I think the team that's going to do the best is the team that puts it out, the team that is the most relaxed and the team that's obviously not as nervous.
How fine of a line is it of ramping up too early for a match like this? And at what point during this week do you really start getting that laser focus on, I've recuperated. We had fun the first few days of the first week. At what point do we really start getting that laser focus and putting our game face on, so to speak?
MLS Cup is Saturday, I believe. So to answer that question, Wednesday, Thursday is the time where you're going to have your hardest training sessions. You want to push guys' legs. You want to make sure that guys are not losing fitness by having too easy of training sessions. So tomorrow and Thursday, I believe that these teams will, you know, push their paces a little bit. They'll push the players a little harder. And then, you know, Thursday, Friday, it'll be about pushing the legs, but also about tactical work. And look, these are both great teams. They're both good coaches. They've definitely been working on tactics for the past couple of days, because this will be a very tactical game. Two teams that play completely different formations, and obviously two teams that are fun to watch. So it'll be a great game. You know that players are they've been mentally focused for the past week on the task at hand, but I think it's been light. Now you'll see in the next few days, the focus will ramp up another notch, and you won't see guys out, out and about. You won't see guys out, you know, late. You won't see guys doing much other than relaxing in their hotel rooms, maybe see a movie or two. This is for all the marbles. You want guys focused and ready to play at their highest level.
I know you're not going to speak for any of the other players, but from your own personal experience, at what point during the week when you're carrying an injury, do you say to yourself, you know what, I don't know if I can go on Saturday? At what point during the week does that realization start to occur, or the other side occur going, you know what, I probably can push through this at some point?
Yeah, I think it's probably 2 days before the game is when, as a player, you know your body the best. You know how far you can push your body through pain. You know that if you have a little bit of an injury, if this is the type of injury that you can play through or not. And that always happens 2 or 3 days before a game. And whenever I have a little bit of a back spasm or a muscle tightness, I say to myself, all right, if I get treatment on this for 2 days, if I, you know, not take it easy in training, but make sure I'm smart in training about not doing something stupid to injure it more, then I know that I'll be ready to play. It's hard to answer because every player is different. Every player has different pain thresholds. You just hope that your best players, if they are carrying little knocks and little injuries, you just hope that, you know, they take a shot or they take some painkillers and they just get on with it. And they say that they're going to be ready to play, because when it comes down to it, once the adrenaline starts flowing, you know, that's the best painkiller in and of itself, is being able to get out there and hear the fans. And once you step on the field, sometimes the pain that you have in training or the pain that you have when you wake up, that just seems to go away and disappear for 90 minutes, because you know that after 90 minutes, you see the light at the end of the tunnel, and that's going to be something that no one will be able to take away from you, as a championship.
People always talk about during Super Bowl week, what team or which players are going to be able to put aside the pageantry of the Super Bowl, because the game is laid out so differently than what players are used to. You kind of alluded to that as well in your experience playing for FC Dallas in your match for MLS Cup versus Colorado Rapids. Is there that situation for MLS Cup where things are a little different? The times we go out to warm up are different. Maybe the lead up once we're on the pitch with our tracksuits off is a little longer. Does that happen in MLS Cup?
Yeah, absolutely. Everything is very regimented. Everything is very on schedule. I think, you know, the teams, for the most part, the teams get to choose when they want to train. I'm not sure how it will work now with the host team being Sporting Kansas City. I'm not sure if they get preference over their training time. So I'm not sure how too much of that works. What I will say and what I do know is that both teams are afforded every luxury to be able to compete at the highest level. Both teams will be on the same playing field. I'm sure that Real Salt Lake, if the game is Saturday, I'm sure they'll fly out either tomorrow or at the latest on Thursday to be in Kansas City to get acclimated to the weather, to get acclimated to the field. I'd be very surprised if Real Salt Lake didn't fly out tomorrow or even got to Kansas City already today, because you want to be as familiar as you possibly can with the field. You know, Kansas City is going to be at home. To me, that gives them a slight edge, because we all know that in MLS, when teams play at home, they tend to be a lot stronger than they are on the road. But you have to obviously realize that this is a one-off game. You know, this is the playoffs. This isn't a regular season game. So I think it'll be an interesting tactical battle, and I think that it'll be a game that's certainly going to live up to the hype. You know, the pageantry and all that stuff, it's different. It has a much different feel than the regular season. You know, you have more reporters, you have more fans, you have more bigwigs out, you have players from other teams lurking around your hotel. And it's fun. You know, you want to enjoy it. That's the main thing. You want to soak it all in, because you don't know when you're going to have another chance to go back to MLS Cup and compete for a championship. So I always try to have as much fun as I possibly can when I play in a big game. You have to balance that between focus and making sure you're relaxed. So I think both teams are ready. I think both teams will be prepared to the fullest extent, because they both teams have very good coaches. So we'll see. It should be a great game.
Now, Dax, will you be one of those players lurking in the hotel room?
I will be lurking. This is going to be the first time that I attend MLS Cup, not as a player.
What made you decide that this is the year you want to go?
Well, you know, it's a couple things. MLS reached out to me, and they seem to think that I have a very engaging personality, and they wanted me there to, you know, do some promotional appearances and go mingle and be there for a few places and a few things that I think some other players will be at as well. So that was an honor for me. It's obviously going to be a joy to, you know, mingle and be able to meet some people that make MLS work, some people in the front office, and obviously the fans that are going to be at some of these cool events that MLS Cup has. So that was the main thing. And MLS was brilliant. You know, I'll be able to have a companion. My girlfriend is going to come out with me. So it'll be fun, because I think this will be her first experience at an MLS Cup.
Nice.
So it's just, as a player, it's going to be hard for me to watch the game, because I'm going to be pissed off that I'm not playing in it. And that's normal. I always would rather be playing than watching, but you know, the reality is we lost to fair and square to a good playoff team in Houston. But I will be, I'll be trying to soak it in as a spectator.
You seemed to be the most comfortable of the MLS 36 guys as far as having the cameras following you around. It was almost as if you were born to have cameras following you around all the time.
Yeah, I mean, if you had this face, you would obviously be comfortable with cameras on you all the time, you know? I'm pushing for my own reality TV show, so No, I'm just kidding. I came into the league at a young age. I was 18, and I was used to it, you know, and I took a lot of pride in being engaging and being someone that's not just boring to talk to, someone that's not just a guy that, you know, you're going to talk to him about soccer and he's going to give you some robot answers.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to be a guy that people actually, when they hung up the phone with me or when they finished talking to me, I wanted to be a guy that people said, wow, that guy is not just a dumb jock. You
yeah.
know, he's got some substance to him, you know, and it's been fun. I look at all that stuff as fun. And I don't, you know, I don't see the point in being guarded and holding back. There are certain things that obviously you have to be guarded about and you can't go into too much detail about. But for the most part, fans are the whole reason that we have jobs. You know, fans are why we play the game. Other than the passion for the sport, you know, fans pay our bills and they are people that, you know, I appreciate. And if I wasn't, you know, a guy that reached out and wanted to interact with them, I would feel bad. And I would feel like, you know, I wasn't giving, you know, the community or the fans all that they deserve. So I always try to be a guy that's approachable. You know, sometimes I'll crack a joke and it just won't be funny at all. And you just got to take stuff like that on the chin. And, you know, I think the more you put yourself out there, whether it be on camera, whether it be on Twitter, on Instagram, I think the more people appreciate you. And I think the more people can relate to you on just a personal level and not just as, oh, this guy's an athlete and, you know, he doesn't care about the people that, you know, really are passionate about the team. So that's something I take a lot of pride in. And I'm glad that MLS has invited me to go out to MLS Cup. And that's something that I'm going to soak in and, you know, going to try to make some people laugh and sign some autographs and just overall have a good time.
Are you sad that you can't bring your Movember mustache with you to MLS?
I am. And I wanted to. I was getting compliments left and right about it.
Of course you were, Dax.
The boss, my girlfriend said that I had to shave it. So that was disappointing, you know, but she's got her reasons.
So there was a chance that you would have kept the Movember mustache into December.
No, honestly, I probably wouldn't have. I probably would have shaved it because mustaches get incredibly annoying. I see.
They do.
You know, I've seen you had a mustache
yes.
for quite a while.
Yep.
I don't know if you still have it.
No,
but,
I had to shave it.
I don't know. People that have facial hair longer than a month, I got to tip my hat to you because I don't know how you do it. It's just, to me, it's itchy and gets in my I don't groom it, so my hair comes over
yep.
my lip, kind of gets in my mouth. I get food stuck
food.
In it when I eat. Yeah, it's just one of those things that I just don't think I could have handled it. You know, if I'm doing it for a good cause, no problem. But if I don't have to have it, I don't think I would have kept it.
Now, did you do it officially through Movember? Like, were you doing fundraising along with it?
I was. I had my own page. I tweeted out a selfie, and I never take selfies. I literally have never taken one selfie in my entire life. But I figured I would for the cancer awareness. And
yeah.
I had my own page, and I'm going to, you know, check on that in the next few days with the Red Bulls and see if I did my part and I raised a little bit of money. I hope I did, but I think it's great that, you know, these guys that started Movember 10 years ago or however long it was with an idea.
Yeah.
I think it's grown into something that's just massive. And that's, you know, that's what America is all about. That's what, you know, that's what we're founded on. It's just people having great ideas and them evolving and turning into things that people can participate in. So, it's a great cause, and I'm going to support it for as long as I can. And as long as I can grow facial hair, that mustache will be on my lip all every November.
Dax, the guys that founded it were Australian, but I do appreciate your pro-American sentiment.
Exactly. Australian, American, they both start with an A. It's the same thing.
Next year, let's see what we can do to maybe get on the same Movember team so that we can maybe combine all our efforts and do like a big fundraising
thing. Yeah, let's tag team that thing, man. That'll raise tons of money.
Enjoy yourself in Kansas City, Dax, and thank you for taking us a little behind the scenes on a player's mindset getting into MLS Cup.
No problem. Thanks for having me, Roach. Have a good one.
I love me some Dax McCarty, and I really appreciate him joining us. I thought that was kind of interesting, just getting that perspective of a guy who's been there and probably will be again. Let's bring in Brian Dunseth. He covers Real Salt Lake. He knows the ins and outs of that team and also MLS things as well. He's plugged into American soccer. Dunny, how are you, sir?
I'm good, man. Good. Everything good?
Yeah. We're just getting ready for Saturday. I know you're pretty excited as well, being one of the teams, or the team that you cover. Real Salt Lake is one of the teams playing in MLS Cup. Before we get to that, though, we learned best 11 for MLS this year. Any surprises for you, or was all your choices that you made publicly all right on the mark?
Yeah. I think I came in 7 for 11. So I was a little bit off. I did not have Jose Gonzalez coming anywhere near the best 11, much less the defender of the year. I only saw him once. I think he's a victim of kind of a few teams in this league that don't get enough national attention, and I only judged him based on the one game that I saw against Real Salt Lake, and he kind of got turned inside out a few times. So I was surprised by that one. To be honest with you, I was a little bit surprised. I guess you can't really go wrong at this point, right, with best 11. I think it's all debatable after the fact when we're talking about the snubs. But I thought there were a few players left off. I thought Javier Morales had a great year this year. And I know it's been a toss-up between he and Diego Valeri, and Diego Valeri, I think, is a shoe-in for newcomer of the year. But I was also a bit surprised that Paulo Dukas wasn't in the best 11 for defenders. I just thought he came in, he really solidified that back line. He complimented Donovan Ricketts very, very well. And then outside that, I was a little surprised Landon Donovan was left off, because I thought regardless of how you feel about Landon and how you feel about kind of his extended offseason, I thought he was vital to the success of not only the LA Galaxy, but also of Robbie Keane. So you really can't go wrong with best 11. I think the only thing we all have arguments are on the media side is how did so-and-so insert name here get left off.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, to your point about Cobb, do you think that he might have been hurt by the fact that there were already three Timbers on the best 11?
Yeah, absolutely. I think also Darlington Nagbe's name should be
totally
in the conversation. I thought he was phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal this year. I'll always sound like a bit of a homer because I guess I'm kind of represent one of the voices of Real Salt Lake. But I was shocked, really, really shocked,
yeah,
not to see a single RSL player. I said this earlier on our show and On Frame that I think sometimes the bar has been set so high in terms of consistency. I mean, 5 years of 15-plus wins, over 50 points. I think sometimes, and you know, again, it's arguable, but I think sometimes as fans, we kind of overlook how well some of the teams are playing, or excuse me, some of the players are playing over the course of the season, just because we're so used to them performing at such a high level.
Yeah.
And you know, you can go around the league, and you can identify certain teams that have had good years, and you know, make arguments. But I think not seeing a single RSL player in the starting 11. The best 11, especially with the fact that they traded away three all-stars and a solid contributor and a guy like Johnny Steele. I thought that was a little bit surprising. And outside of that, the lack of a New York Red Bulls presence outside of Tim Cahill.
Let me ask you this. I do have a point to your point, but when is this vote to do in?
Like, for best 11?
Yeah, is it pre-playoff?
Yeah, I think I voted right before the playoffs.
Okay, so
we're basing it on, you know, MLS regular season standard.
And that's the problem is, you know, I'm not saying it's a problem. It's for the regular season, so it would stand to reason that it should be in before then. But, you know, and this is my next question, which you touched on in your last answer and also in other arenas, is that, you know, RSL, as you said, were too deep or too good for so long that people have begun to take them for granted. And you're seeing that people took them for granted at their own risk, as after the best 11 votes are due in, you see RSL make this run to MLS Cup.
No, I agree with you. I think, you know, I actually had this conversation today. It's funny. I've always been disappointed with the fact that statistics weren't kept for players in the postseason. I think, in my opinion, it's a travesty that players that work so hard and play so well throughout the course of the season aren't rewarded at the end of the day with their stats being counted towards their quote-unquote career statistics in Major League Soccer. Because I think you do a disservice to the, you know, the big game Charlies, you know, the guys that really do show up in the playoffs when it really matters. Because I think it's very easy throughout the course of the season to statistically have a good year. But when teams tighten up, and I'll use an example. I'm going to use it loosely, and it's not to take a shot at him, but Jack McInerney is a perfect example. You know, the kid's lights out. He's just on fire the first half of the season. Once you get to the All-Star break, you know, I think that's when teams start slowing down offensively. It's when teams defensively start working on an identity, a structure, a formation of how to defend. And then once you get down to those final weeks of the playoff or into the playoffs, that final stretch is you start seeing, you know, 0-0 results, 1-0 results, 2-1 results. You don't see those 5-3 games anymore. So the first half of the season is all about scoring goals. The second half of the season is all about defending as a core group, as a unit, and working on tactical shape. And that's why my argument's always been for MLS to focus on counting the statistics in the postseason, because I think that's when the most important statistics happen. That's guys showing up in big games when you know the defense is focused on you and focused on shutting you down. I think those stats are even more important.
Let's start turning our attention to Saturday's match at Sporting Park. It'll be RSL versus Sporting Kansas City. First off, Dunny, and I don't know how in the loop you are on Ticketgate, but could you give us a brief overview on what happened and your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I was in California. I finally got my first pseudo vacation. I did Europa League back-to-back games in L.A. On Thanksgiving morning. So I was trying my best to distance myself from all things soccer while at the same time focusing on that and trying to get my voice back after losing it in Portland. But from what I understand and how it's kind of been reported is in some way, shape, or form, a certain code was leaked that was meant for Sporting Kansas City fans. And that code was to allow fans to purchase tickets to the final via Ticketmaster. With this day and age, with technology, with social media, with the amount of sharing that goes amongst what I think is the most proactive supporter group in sports in the United States, because we as soccer fans don't get force-fed our sports the same way football, basketball, baseball do. We have to be socially active, being more aggressive. The information went public. It was retweeted through, you know, every single avenue possible, and tickets were purchased. After tickets were purchased, confirmation was given. Fans, Real Salt Lake, who thought they had ticket in hand, ended up buying flights, ended up buying hotels, and some ended up shelling over $2,000 out after the fact of buying tickets.
Because they, in their mind, because in their mind, they already had their tickets.
The confirmation was in place. Absolutely. And a couple of buddies that I know here in Salt Lake received email confirmations that their purchase has gone through, both on Ticketmaster's side and through their credit card company. So once Ticketmaster and Sporting Kansas City and Real Salt Lake, after it all became public that this happened, I don't know. I'm trying to navigate this the right way without pointing fingers, but between the three, somehow it was decided that, you know, Ticketgate would be would be the hashtag of choice for the next couple of days. And all those tickets, the order would be rescinded. It would take 5 to 7 days for money to be put back in the accounts of those who had purchased the said tickets, and all those purchases would be voided. So now, basically, what I've been telling fans that I know the secondary market sucks, but if you can find StubHub or if you can find tickets, you know, on that secondary market, that's probably your best bet. But, you know, it's a terrible situation all the way around. It's something, if this was in Salt Lake, it would be a similar situation for Sporting Kansas City fans in terms of trying to get tickets in limited availability. Not ideal by any means, but then again, I think it puts more of an onus on the teams and the players trying to make sure that they secure home field advantage for the MLS Cup final, should they have that opportunity.
Yeah, and that's a great point. And, you know, I don't want to point fingers either. For me as an outsider, it feels more of, rather than a situation of malice on anyone's part, MLS or Sporting Kansas City, it seems more of a naivete to think to themselves, like you said, in this day and age, with the way things work, that you would be able to I don't want to say sneak through, but put something out online and only people in Kansas City have any knowledge of it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. But again, you know, to build on that point, I think we are in the most progressive, technologically driven situation that we've ever been in. And I think it's, while at times there are going to be situations like this and you know, kind of quote unquote our worst enemy, I think it's our best friend in terms of driving the game and creating fan culture and rivalry. And again, to put a feather in the cap of MLS and MLSsoccer.com and what Chris Slosser and Greg Lawless and company are trying to do over there, I think it creates this unique dynamic where it continues to evolve and hopefully lessons learned going forward.
Yeah.
You know, that potentially we can take advantage of situations. But listen, at the end of the day, at some level, depending on where what side you're sitting on, it's a great problem to have that we're talking about this. I mean, I've been a part of this league since 1997, and I can tell you firsthand, it was never like this. It was never like this in the good old days.
But, I mean, this is the good and the bad about having MLS Cup at a venue of one of the teams playing. Let me ask you this question in this way to kind of sidestep any issues. Would a situation where it would be a 50-50 situation for both clubs, even the visiting club, would that rectify that, or would that kind of negate the whole we've got a home field advantage situation in the first place?
You know, I think it could, but I also remember, what was it, 2010 in Toronto? And, you know, it was a delayed kickoff. I want to say it was around 8 or 9 o'clock on East Coast time.
Yeah.
When it kicked in Toronto, and I was freezing to death. I remember sitting next to Bobby Ryan, and we were just chugging beers trying to stay warm. We were looking for the nearest St. Bernard and a collar full of whiskey. And, you know, it's after being in L.A. the last couple of years, and, you know, I think it builds something special. You know, it builds another importance. And I think we're always, you know, as fans and media, you know, just slagging MLS off for not being a promotion relegation and not being, you know, the whole kind of purist idea of how it is around the world, every other place. You know, it's an interesting dynamic. And I think it puts more of a focus on, you know, not skating through the summer months and not, you know, just backing off when, you know, that intensity that we're always talking about, comparing it to Premier League or La Liga or Serie A or Bundesliga or, you know, your league of choice. We're always saying how important those games are. You know, maybe this puts more of an importance on there and puts more of an importance on, you know, trophies as opposed to friendlies.
The Jason Christ to NYCFC rumors heated up over the last few days. You know, the way I look at it is this is another step as far as the media is concerned, or at least for the players, that, you know, the league is big time now. This is what the players in every other major sports, these kind of narratives pop up when you have 2 weeks to come up with storylines for games. You know, you see it all the time in Super Bowls, but for the players and for Jason Christ, how much of a distraction is this for guys who aren't used to having to deal with this kind of pressure going into an MLS Cup and then this kind of media scrutiny going into a big match like this?
You know, it's funny. I actually called Brian Strauss immediately after I saw that tweet. I consider him a good friend of mine. And I was like, oh, thanks. You just swatted the hornet's nest in Salt Lake City. Congratulations. And he honestly didn't think it was going to be that big of a story. You know, it was, from his perspective, it was the same person who had confirmed Jason's trip to Manchester City in the middle of the summer. And credit to Jason, for Brian's first tweet to cause so much havoc is expected, but I don't think people gave Brian enough credit, because his second tweet was something along the lines of, you know, what is this? What does this say? You know, here's this source claiming this deal's almost 100% done. Yet Jason has not only deflected it publicly, but he has turned this team into this juggernaut, you know, tighten the screws, and his focus was only Real Salt Lake. I think this only benefits, you know, this story only benefits, you know, one person, and that's the source who intended to leak it. And I think that intention was nothing more than to make New York FC relevant during the MLS Cup, you know, the week leading into the MLS Cup final. I think from Jason's perspective, whatever he decides to do, he deserves the opportunity. He's been nothing but a consummate professional. He's an incredible human being. He's the type of guy that you want to be friends with, that you want to play for, that you want to go into battle with. And regardless of what he chooses after that final whistle this weekend, I've got nothing but respect for him. I think the players recognize it. It's a non-conversation inside the RSL locker room. It's more of a conversation for the fans and for the media. And at the end of the day, it's a situation where I think if all parties were honest, from RSL's side, from Jason's side, from anyone involved, from an agent side, this is something that should have gotten taken care of 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. There's no way a guy like Jason Christ should be in the final 2 years of his contract without seeing a new contract presented. Now, there's a lot of dynamics between the ownership change of Dave Checketts and Deloy Hansen that lead into this situation. You know, the first time for Deloy of dealing with a sports management situation where he's got a coach in the last year of his contract. Whatever finger we decide to point at or use to point at the end of the day, I think it would be a huge, huge loss for RSL if Jason Christ was no longer the head coach. But that's something that, you know, Jason's been adamant about. He's been public out here saying he's going to take 3 days to walk away after the game and just go into his bunker and sort out what his life, what that next step is for he and his family and professionally. And I believe Jason when he says that he hasn't come to a decision, and whatever that source said was incorrect. But I will say that if I was Jason Christ, which I'm not, if I was even leaning towards a situation like that, I would have some massive, massive concerns that someone would intend to leak something like that.
Yeah.
And cause that much harm to the preparation of what he's trying to do with no other risk than putting a feather in his own cap. That would absolutely concern me.
Good point. Very good point. Let's talk about the matchup itself. I don't want to get all Euro on you, but this does feel like, to me as an MLS fan, a dream matchup. And I say that because two smaller market teams, not in the glamour cities. So, I mean, from a league standpoint, I could see why you'd want a New York, an LA, a Seattle. But for me, I see two passionate fan bases, two well-run organizations doing battle for an MLS Cup, and two clubs that play a very entertaining brand of soccer. And to me, that's why it feels like the dream matchup. Portland would have been great as well, but these two are really, really good.
Yeah, I think they're best friends and mortal enemies all wrapped in one. Aesthetically, they play a very similar style. Defensively, they're unapologetic for the way they play. Not afraid to tackle, get stuck in, to physically dominate their opponents. Offensively, I think both of them really apply the same philosophy, and that's to basically strangle their opponents through possession. While structurally and from a formation standpoint, they look a little bit different, I think the idea and the philosophy is still the same. You know, Real Salt Lake is known for their diamond formation and the 4-4-2 structure. Sporting Kansas City is the 4-3-3. They like to defend high. They like to recover the ball quickly. They like to basically limit the amount of space that they have to attack by already being in the offensive half of the field when they recover the ball. And again, it's two head coaches that have played Major League Soccer. I think that's probably the most prideful part is both players have kind of seen the highlight of their career in the league and then transitioned into taking over and using that philosophy, that experience to find success. both teams with designated players, but yet at the same time they focus on the development of young American players. And I agree with you. I think this is it's going to be demolition derby for 15 minutes, and it's going to settle in, and it's going to be really about Sporting Kansas City utilizing their strength through wide play and overlapping runs and thumping balls into the box. And for Real Salt Lake, the idea is not to get caught up in that and really utilize the possession and the diamond and overloading the midfield and kind of the typical possession style oriented attack that RSL's used to dictating over the course of 90 minutes.
And I think at this point in the development of the league, at least from a media or a rating standpoint, market size isn't important. It's more important to put on a good show in your marquee matchup or your last game of the season for the league.
Yeah, I've made this argument, you know, to Real Salt Lake fans over and over and over. You know, it's one thing to aesthetically be one of the best looking teams in the league with the ball at your feet and the chances created. It's another thing to redefine yourself as a fan base and to create an atmosphere outside of those white lines and in the seats. And I give credit to Rob Heineman and Peter Vermeesen for the team and how active they've been in and around the city of Kansas City. What they've done is nothing short of phenomenal. Sporting Kansas City has set the bar in terms of redefining an organization. And I think it actually, what they've done is made Chivas USA look that much more embarrassing.
Yeah.
It's been incredible what the fans have done. The whole atmosphere, the blue hell, I mean, everything from a digital aspect to an in-stadium experience. I love being a part of the broadcast going there. I love being a part of the NBC Sports broadcast when I'm in between the benches and I can feel the intensity on the field and I can smell the grass and I can see guys clattering into each other. It is incredible. And I think it's the standard that's been set for MLS. And it's, I think, something that, with the exception of Seattle and Portland, I think those two teams and Sporting Kansas City, and no disrespect to any other supporters group, but I truly feel like that bar has been set. It's taken what Barra Brava was in DC, you know, back in the late 90s and kind of, you know, put a magnifying glass in, put a firecracker underneath it and just exploded it and turned it into a whole different realm.
Yeah, and the reason I look at Kansas City over Portland or Seattle is because of the rebrand. And, it, you know, for a guy who supports the team that is kind of in the doldrums right now, which is DC United, I look at Kansas City and I go, okay, this isn't an expansion team. This is a team that just basically said, you know what, everything's wiped away. We're starting from scratch, and they built this from something that was already there that wasn't awful, but it wasn't great either. And I think that's something that should hearten every other team in the league outside of your big supporters areas like Seattle and Portland.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, to be honest, it's probably their third rebrand, if we're being honest. I mean, it was the Kansas City Wiz.
Yeah.
Then it was the Kansas City Wizards. You know, you go from Arrowhead to a Division III, a AAA baseball field, and now you have Sporting Park. It's, you know, I think it shows the importance of local ownership. It shows the importance of pride within the city to have successful sports teams. And what I always say is, you know, I think you go back to those days of DC United and how incredible. I mean, I remember being on the field at RFK and smelling the grass and feeling the humidity in the air and looking around and watching the stands bounce and looking across the field and seeing those classic all black kits with the big white stripes across their chest. It was intimidating. I mean, it was incredibly intimidating. You start naming the players historically,
yeah.
That gets even more frightening, but you know, I think that's what the idea is, and that's the standard that's set for every MLS club and every MLS supporters group, and it's unique in each individual market. But I think it's up to, you know, it's up to ownership, it's up to the presidents, it's up to marketing, the general managers, how to harness that, especially given that social media is so strong now, and it brings together so many different cultures. And types of people. And that's the one thing. I do respect Timber's Army. I think Timber's Army is incredible And then Seattle, what they've done, there's a brand that I think the common fan has latched onto, an idea, and that's not easy to create. I think that's very difficult to create.
Give me one or two matchups that you will be kind of keeping your eye on as the match unfolds.
I think first and foremost, the health of Alvaro Saborillo and Chris Winger. I think, you know, with Chris Winger, collapsed lung, dislocated ribs, and on that tackle on Diego Valeri in the first leg, Alvaro Saborillo pulling up lame with the adductor injury in that first leg, and RSL having to finish with 10 men against the LA Galaxy. If they are healthy enough to go, my question is, are they healthy enough to go 120 minutes? Because I don't see a lot of goals being scored in this game. And if you get pushed into overtime, you got to make sure you got guys that are healthy enough. I think for me, the X factor for Sporting Kansas City has always been Aurelien Collin. I think he's one of the most athletically gifted defenders in the league, yet he takes an unbelievable amount of risks over the course of 90 minutes. His tackles, his aerial ability. I think with the ball at his feet, there's so many times where I sit there and I'm watching him and saying, whoa, I would never, as a former center back, ever put myself in that situation. But then again, I was a complete donkey and there's no way I could recover the way he could. And then also, I think the front three for Sporting Kansas City, that's my next one. Who plays? I mean, you sell Kai Kamara to Middlesbrough, so you lose a starter and you lose the first substitute on the bench that has to fill his role. We've seen Teal Bunbury and Dom Dwyer, switch at that point striker. We've seen Bieler come off the bench, and he's their big DP who's got double digits since goals. Benny Fellhaber playing so well, Graham Zusi pushes out to the right, but Suni Saad, Jacob Peterson, and CJ Sapong have all come in and started at certain points. None of those guys, I think, would scare RSL defensively. But I think none of those guys scared Houston Dynamo defensively either. So Sporting Kansas City is a very, very good team. I like the way they play. They got bite. I like Yuri Rosell. I like Paulo Nagamura. I like how they boss around the midfield. Graham Busey can do things very few players can do in Major League Soccer. But for RSL, like with Beckerman, Luis Gil, Ned Grabovoi, Javi Morales, that diamond formation, I just think it's dirty. I love it. I think they're so good in what they do, and they're so confident. They played so many games together. There's a lot of individual matchups, and I think outside that first 15 minutes of Demolition Derby, it could really come down to just one mistake and ultimately which team can punish that one mistake.
Devin Sandoval's, I don't want to say emergence, but the way that he played against Portland, does that make it maybe a little easier for Jason Christ to go, okay, you know, maybe I'll run Sandoval out for 60 minutes and then I have my ace in the hole with Saborillo if I need him and we get down to that time?
Yeah, the six-fingered man, Inigo Montoya, a.k.a. Devin Sandoval, he's been nothing short of fantastic this year. With Fabian Espinola going to New York, they bring back Robbie Finley. They bring in Joao Plata from Toronto. They find Olmes Garcia in Colombia, and somehow they get a second-round pick in Devin Sandoval, who no one had tabs on. Sandoval brings a very similar stature to Sabo, but he's different. Sabo's a goal scorer. Sabo is point striker. Size, strength, stay centrally, where Devin Sandoval can mimic that style, but yet when he gets the ball off his chest or off his feet, he spins, and he usually spins into the outside shoulder of a center back and the inside shoulder of an outside back, so he kind of spins wide, where Sabo kind of stays central. When Sandoval's on the field and he does spin wide, that's where Javier Morales looks to vacate and go into that space where Sandoval just kind of pushed out. And so it brings a little bit of a different dynamic. And I think Devin Sandoval has proved without a shadow of a doubt that he's ready to play at this level. And I can only imagine once this season's over how many phone calls he's going to get from teams around the league trying to see if they can pry Sandoval away from Real Salt Lake.
I'm not going to ask you for your prediction because you're in a no-win situation. If you choose Sporting Kansas City, you still got to go back to Salt Lake and live there. And if you choose Salt Lake, everyone's going to call you a homer, Brian.
I'm so used to be called a homer at this point. It doesn't really matter. I really do see it going goalless for a while. I think this game could come down to the difference, one rash challenge, one guy who goes in a little too hard. What I said earlier today on our show is I think that there's going to be one guy who's so amped up over this game, knowing that's on national television, knowing it's a final, knowing it's in Kansas City with that type of fan base, that there's going to be someone that goes in for an early yellow card. And I think Hilario Grajeda, who's named the MLS Referee of the Year, who's going to be in charge, I think he's going to try to get a hold of this game early. I don't think he's going to allow these two teams that have a physical history with each other to get out of control. And I think whoever gets that early yellow card, especially if it's a midfield player, if it's a guy like Beckerman, if it's a guy like Yuri Rosell, if it's a guy like Nagamura, that could really change. Even a guy like Chris Schuler or, you know, potentially Aurelien Collin. If any of those guys go in the book, that could really change everything in that second half, knowing there could be that one play where the ball kind of skips away, or the one play where it's a heavy touch, or kind of that touch tackle scenario where you see the referee go to the back pocket and go to the red.
See, I think I'm glad you finally mentioned his name, because the description of the person or the scenario just screamed Collin, and then you didn't mention him, and then you mentioned other guys, and then you finally mentioned Collin. I think he's the guy that will look at the surroundings and make that challenge. And, you know, he's walked a tightrope all season where he's kind of avoided a lot more red cards than he probably should have got. And if this is a situation where if a guy's going to go and do something, get a rush of blood to the head, if you will, he's the guy that I'm always looking at.
Yeah, I would say there's always been two guys. Well, in the last 2 years, there's been two guys in this league that I've always said that as a general manager, as a head coach, he would make me cringe, and that would be Victor Bernardes in San Jose, who I think is kind of a poor man's Hamison Olave, and then Aurelien Collin, just because Collin possesses so much athleticism. He's got size, he's got aerial strength, he's hard in the tackle. Positionally, he recovers very well, but he plays, in my opinion, he plays very, very dangerously over 90 minutes. I couldn't agree with you more. I look at this game, and every time I watch him play, I'm prepared to explain why he got the red card or why he got the second yellow. And I think it's just because I'm enamored with the way he plays. I like the way he plays. I like how much emotion that he plays with. But at the same time, I just feel like he's a guy that, thankfully, he's got a guy like Matt Diesler next to him who's calm, he's fluid, very cerebral in his positioning, doesn't go to tackle, doesn't go to you know, pick up the yellow card too often. He's the exact polar opposite of, yeah, of Aurelien Collin. I think that's what makes Sporting Kansas City so good.
He's the guy that is just as likely to get sent off as he is to head home a winner in the 119th minute. Donnie,
absolutely.
Enjoy it, my friend, and thank you very much for taking some time to talk with us.
No, absolutely. I always appreciate it, my man.
Show information, go to pitchpass.com.